I'd like to start off the lesson of Proverbs, and I want to start by reading a verse that Brother Raphael ended with. And that's from Proverbs 8:17. It says, "I love those who love me, and those who diligently, who seek me diligently, find me." So we're going to look at the book of Proverbs, and we're going to see if we can find some lessons in the book of Proverbs. We're going to look a little bit about the history of it. We're going to look a little bit about wisdom, which is the overriding theme of Proverbs, and how it should affect our lives, how we should think about wisdom and seeking wisdom. In the Bible, there are many different styles of writings, especially in the Old Testament. We have prophecy and history and psalms and admonitions. But the book of Proverbs is considered part of the wisdom books. Proverbs is one of the books from the books of wisdom. In Jewish tradition, the three books that make up the books of wisdom are Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job. And it's interesting, if you look at these three books, they show us three sides of gaining wisdom. And just before we get into Proverbs, what I'd like to do is just kind of give a quick overview of these three books. The book of Proverbs is a very idealistic viewpoint. It's, if you look at Proverbs, it's straightforward. If you live righteously, you're going to be blessed. If you live unrighteously, you're not going to be blessed. You will suffer for your choices. And we'll get into that a little more. Ecclesiastes, on the other hand, shows us a completely different viewpoint. It kind of questions Proverbs, in a sense. It says, well, we've been told that if you live righteously, you'll be blessed, and if you live unrighteously, you'll suffer. But I don't see that in life. I see the unrighteous prosper. And the world just continues on, and it goes on, and it's cycle after cycle. What is the benefit? But Ecclesiastes is really interesting, because if you look at it, it has a narrator that starts and ends the book. And in the middle is the bulk of the book, which kind of has this almost a critic's point of view. But the book ends with a really powerful statement. It says, look at what these writings have said. Take them, but remember, if you serve God, you will be blessed. Even if you don't understand why, you will be blessed. And then we go into the third book, which is Job, who goes, yes, that's what happened to me. I served God. I don't know why I went through the experiences I did. I served him, and I continued to serve him through all the experiences, all the hardships and sufferings. And in the end, I was blessed because I served God. So if you look at the three books together, they give this beautiful picture of the wisdom of following after God. So if we're going to look at the book of Proverbs now. And Proverbs is broken down. You can break it down into six sections. There's kind of six main points or sections there. And we're just going to quickly go over them just to give you an idea of what's in them. The first nine chapters are kind of your introduction to Proverbs. They kind of really give you the overview of what the lesson you want to learn from Proverbs is. The reason why we have these Proverbs and what they're for. And the main reason is of Proverbs is really explained in the first seven verses of Proverbs. And I'm just going to read them if you want to turn there. It says, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction from wise dealings in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth, Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. Understand a proverb and a saying, and the words of the wise and their riddles. Fear the Lord, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So this book is all about teaching us wisdom. The lesson it wants to go teach us is how to gain wisdom. It's not going to tell us what necessarily hand out word for word what wisdom is, but it's going to teach us how to learn how to find wisdom. The second section is chapters 10, verse 1 to 22, verse 16. And these ones are called the Proverbs of Solomon. It says, chapter 10, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, and then they continue on. And the majority of these proverbs are one-line proverbs that usually are broken into two parts. And the two parts would be, the first is it gives a saying, and then the second part either contrasts it or builds upon it. And just we'll read Proverbs 1:10. The Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. And these are the way the Proverbs in this section primarily are. Actually, throughout the majority of the book, all the way till you get to about verse or chapter 30, they're along this line. The next section is in Proverbs 22, verse 17, and it goes to the end of chapter 24. And these proverbs are attributed to the words of the wise men. We really don't know much more than that. Some scholars have said that it does. Some of the proverbs in here are similar to an Egyptian philosopher that has some similar. We don't know. It's hard to say, but these words here, if you look at Proverbs 22:17, it says, the words of the wise. This is a section that, again, like you say, we don't know where the original content came from, but they were proverbs that were important to the people, to those that compiled the book. The next section is Proverbs 25 through 29. And these again are Proverbs of Solomon, but they were collected during the time of Hezekiah. And just to read that, Proverbs 25:1, it says, these are more Proverbs of Solomon collected by the advisors of King Hezekiah of Judah. You remember when Hezekiah, you know, after he came into power and he had his men go into the temple and find all the books and all the collections of writings and all that, and they tried to change everything back to serving God. And these probably when they found these Proverbs of Solomon, and they were added on to here. So this would probably be at least a couple hundred years later. So we can see that the book of Proverbs to the Jewish nation actually took a period of time before the book actually came into full to how it is right at this point in time. And not only that, but it also shows how God is instrumental in making sure that his word is brought forth. The chapter 30 is the next section, and here we have, hear you the words of Agur, son of Yek, I don't even know how you say that. And who he was, there's no reference to him anywhere else. But again, his words were important enough to be included in here. And then after that, those are the first 14 verses of chapter 30. Chapter 30, the rest of the chapter, actually is a set of riddles that are in a 3-4 format. And I'm just going to read one to you here, just so you get the idea. And this is in verse 15 and 16. They're kind of interesting. We're just going to read the last half of verse 15 and then verse 16. It says, three things are never satisfied, four never say enough. Sheol, the barren womb, the earth ever thirsty for water, and the fire that never says enough. And you kind of look at it and you go, what's the connection here? But if you think on it, and this is one of the way that the book of Proverbs makes you think, it's making you think, how do these four things say never enough? And if you look at them, you see that there's connections between them. You have Sheol is death. It never ends. We're all doomed to go to the grave. We're all doomed to die until, as we know, but mankind is on the path to death. Every single person dies. The womb that never bears is the opposite. There is no life comes forth from the womb. It never has, it never says enough. There's never satisfied. The ground that you can pour all the water on, but never grows a crop, again, is ground that is barren. Much like a barren womb. And the fire that never says enough, no matter how much timber there is, if the fire is burning, it will keep going and going, much like the grave. So here you have this riddle, and you see, making the connection between Sheol and fire, the barren womb and the barren soil. And it's making you think, and that, actually some of them are really interesting if you get a chance to read on, and they're really fascinating. The one about how the writer there can't figure out about the young man, how he can attract a young woman is quite interesting and funny too. But anyway, never mind. Anyway, we'll continue on. We won't worry about it. The last chapter, chapter 31, the first nine verses are King Lemuel, and these are instructions from his mother. And again, this is kind of interesting because here we have words of instruction attributed to the mother of King Lemuel. And you know, there's not a lot of books in the Bible that are written or words from a mother's point of view or a female point of view. And here Proverbs includes a section to show us that. And then following that is probably one of the most interesting sections in or a very interesting section in the book is the 10 to 31, the section of the ideal wife or woman. The excellent woman. And this is if you could understand Hebrew, it is a very poetic section, they say. I'm going to have to take the words of those who can understand Hebrew. It's written in a very poetic way. And it talks about the wonderful woman, a wife to look for. And we're going to actually talk a little bit more about that section a little bit later on, so we won't go into too much here. As we mentioned earlier, the main focus of Proverbs is gaining wisdom. And Brother Raphael talked about seeking God, and really that is gaining wisdom in its fullest sense, and in that sense it really ties in here. But the Hebrew word for wisdom is from Strong's in the Hebrew section of 2451, and it's pronounced chokmah. And in some ways, it's similar to the word wisdom that we have in the English language, where we think about wisdom is having good judgment, using the experiences that we have, and being able to make a proper assessment of the thing and judge it in the right way. But it has that definition, but it has more. It adds more to it that the English word wisdom doesn't convey. And remember back when they were building the tabernacle, and Bezalel was chosen to be the chief's craftsman. And when it describes him, and I'm going to read the description in Exodus 35:31, it says, And he has filled him with the Spirit of God, with skill, with intelligence, and with knowledge, and with all craftsmanship. We don't see wisdom in there, do we? But the word chokmah is. And I'm just going to change that. And it says, and he has filled him with the Spirit of God, with chokmah, with skill. So wisdom not only in the Hebrew language does it mean having the knowledge and the understanding and the ability to make the correct assessment, but it talks about having the proper skill of how using that wisdom. So in the Hebrew word for wisdom, chokhmah, you could say a craftsman who builds a beautiful table and has very skillful has chokhmah. So it gives that really extra point so that when we are seeking God's wisdom and using it, we must make sure that we use God's wisdom with skill, not using it in a way that suits us or makes us look good, but a way that is skillfully conveying the word of God. And then Proverbs adds one more point to the understanding of the word chokhmah, or wisdom. It adds a moral point side to it. Proverbs 9:10 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is insight." So when we come to understand wisdom that we have must be based on the values of God. We must have that same moral judgment that God uses. So not only do we have to understand and make the right judgments, but we also have to use it skillfully, and we have to do it in a way that gives praise to God and gives and is uplifting and building to those around. You know, I was thinking about last night when Brother Brian was talking about the example of the brethren in the Corinthian church. Many of those brethren had wisdom when it came to understanding that they didn't need to. They could eat meat that was offered to idols. Didn't matter to them. They had the wisdom in that part. They had the understanding and knowledge of that. And they might even skillfully been able to convey that to others. But when they would go around and eat in a manner that would flaunt it in front of others who might have been hurt by that or stumbled, they were not showing wisdom. They were missing all three components. Apostle Paul, on the other hand, explained very nicely that to show true wisdom in that situation is he would not eat that meat if it offended or stumbled at, and I shouldn't say offended, it stumbled anyone. That's the spirit of wisdom that is portrayed in Proverbs. The other interesting thing about wisdom that's really conveyed in Proverbs is that wisdom is with God from the beginning of time. It was there when he created the world. And we see this in Proverbs 3, 19 and 20. "The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding he established the heavens. And by his knowledge he broke open and the clouds dropped down the dew." And in the other place we see it is in Proverbs 8:22 and on to 30. For sake of time, we're not going to read all of these ones, but we'll just read a couple of the verses here. It says, "The Lord brought me forth as the first of his works, before the deeds of old. I was appointed from eternity, from the beginning, before the world began." So we see in these verses that wisdom was integral to God. It actually is part of God's character. And before anybody gets thinking about Proverbs 8, that this applies to Jesus, we're going to touch on that here because I think that's a really important lesson. And it does show how the wisdom of the Bible works. But at its face value, in the way Proverbs is written, we can see the connection between God and wisdom, wisdom is part of God's character. It is an underlying force in all that he does. It controls him, just like love does. And, you know, like we know the four attributes of God, justice, wisdom, love, and power. They're all underlying principles in who he is. And he can't deviate from any of them. Everything he does has to have all those things working in harmony. And wisdom is one of them. So again, just real quickly, chokhmah in Proverbs wisdom in Proverbs is knowledge and understanding and experience of how to make the proper judgment. It's the skill of using it and using it in a way that is morally compatible, or we're in the using the character of God. This is true wisdom. And not to exercise that, in the book of Proverbs says, you're unwise or foolish. or even some points it says wise in your own eyes. So we don't want to be considered foolish. We don't want to be considered wise in our own eyes. But we want to be considered wise in the ways of God. Now, just real quickly, Proverbs 8:22 and on. I think this is one of the most beautiful scriptures that portrays Jesus' creation as the Son of God. And it is powerful. And you can have some that will say that, no, this is only talking about wisdom. But this is one of these scriptures that if we use the wisdom of God and we seek diligently, we can come to understand how God works. And if you look at the word in verse 22 where it talks about, he was with God or created by God, the word, root word there is kana from Hebrews 70:69. It means to create, to procure. And this really shows that God created Jesus. He was the firstborn, and Jesus was there with him through all the rest of creation. I should say the Logos. Logos at that point in time, not Jesus. So the Logos was there. And this is where we see how the wisdom of God works. Because once we get to the New Testament, we can see how the different writers in the New Testament take these verses and apply it in a way that it does relate to Jesus. And we read one of them this morning, Brother Jonathan talked about, is in John, the first chapter of John, where it talks about all things were made through him, and without him, nothing was made. These words are very similar to the words back in Proverbs 8, aren't they? Colossians 1:15, Apostle Paul picks up on this again. He is the image of the invisible Son, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created in heaven and earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. Again, very similar words. So we see how the wisdom of God worked through these apostles to show us the deeper meaning of what Proverbs is. And there are others, but we, for sake of time, won't be able to go through them all. The other point is, we just want to build on this a little bit more, that we want to say where Paul picks up a little bit more on this, and he adds the one other fact in Corinthians where he says in 1 Corinthians 1:30, he is the source of your life in Jesus Christ, whom God made our wisdom and our righteousness and sanctification and redemption. But he has made unto us wisdom. So Jesus now, not only is he the wisdom, the exemplification of wisdom that in Proverbs, but now he is made unto us wisdom at this point in time, that we want to understand God, we have to come through Jesus. So let's continue on back into Proverbs. In Proverbs, in the first nine chapters, especially in the first nine chapters, we see two women personified. The first woman is Lady Wisdom, and the second would be Lady Foolishness. And it shows their description. And Lady Wisdom is pure, faithful, desires you to learn about God. Lady Foolishness, on the other hand, is trying to get you to be tricked or deceived, fall away from God. Proverbs 3, 13 through 18, we're just going to read this. This is what Lady Wisdom has to say. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding, for to For the gain of her is better than the gain from silver, and her profit better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare to her. Long life is in her right hand, and her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and her paths are of peace. She is the tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called blessed. I like the connection to the tree of life. It takes you back all the way back to the Garden of Eden when Adam and Eve were in harmony with God. It shows that connection. If we seek wisdom, the wisdom of God will lead us to the tree of life. And isn't that the promise in Revelation? Those who overcome, you will regain the tree of life. You will be able to eat of the tree of life. And that was Revelation 2:7, if anyone's interested there. On the other hand, Lady Foolishness is described as seductive and adulterous. Her way is ways that lead to death. I'm just going to read a few verses from Proverbs 2 just to get the feel of this. So you will be delivered from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress, her smooth words, who forsake the companions of her youth and forgets her covenant with God. Her house sinks down to death, her paths to the departed. None who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. So you will walk in the ways of the good and keep the paths of righteousness. For the upright will inhabit the land, and those who with integrity will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be rooted out of it. So you don't want to follow after Lady Foolishness. It's not a way of life. And you know, Apostle John picks up in this, of this in 1 John, the second chapter, verse 16, where he talks about the allurements of the world, of the things of this earth. And he says, for all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of possessions is not from the Father, but is from the world. Proverbs is showing a real contrast here. It's saying wisdom, it leads to life. Foolishness, it leads to death. And in the book of Proverbs, there is no other choice. If you're smart, you're going to choose the path of wisdom. So if we look back now into history, I was reading a little bit of some scholars in that, and it kind of gave an interesting thought on that, that the original purpose of the book of Proverbs was really for the development of young men that were going to serve in the court. It was to teach them how to be wise, how that they could be just and honorable in their choices as they were in a rulership position. And that really gives us an understanding of why, especially if you read in the first 9 chapters, why it is written in such a way, why it exemplifies these as wisdom and foolishness are personified as women. You think about it, young men, if you want to get their attention, you mention women. They think about that. So here, the writer, things haven't changed in a long time. But here you have the Proverbs, you know, probably most likely Solomon writing the whole thing here, or this section here. He's trying to get their attention, and he's trying to say, if you want to be wise, look to this woman who exemplifies God, the characteristics of God. Don't follow after a woman who is the exemplification or the characteristics of this world. You want to choose the right path. And as Proverbs goes in these first chapters, chapters 5-7, Lady Foolishness is actually embodied in a real woman. It talks about this, depending on the translation, it'll say a strange or loose or adulterous woman. And it really goes in. Actually, some of the chapters are quite explicit in some of the descriptions in that, or verses are quite descriptive, but it's really focusing in on just how careful you have to be, not to be seduced by this loose or adulterous woman who is foolishness. And in this, the whole description, it's really interesting because in chapter 6, at the first 20 verses or so, it incorporates into those verses some actual everyday commandments, practical warnings about how to deal with your neighbors. The words that we speak, not to be lazy but productive. And then it includes the seven things that God hates. Haughty eyes, lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run to evil, false witness against our brethren, lies, and those that don't sow discord. They're very practical things that are brought out right in the middle of this whole description of this adulterous woman who is the embodiment of Lady Foolishness. What's being shown here is how important it is that everything that we do in our life, every aspect of our life, our dealings with others, dealings with our families, dealings with our neighbors, dealings with God, every choice that we make is either a choice of wisdom or a choice of foolishness. Proverbs is very cut and dry. You want to please God? Choose wisdom. But it's very cut and dry. But in the first 9 chapters, we have this embodiment of Lady Foolishness, but we don't have an embodiment of Lady Wisdom. And we don't see that till we get to the 31st chapter, the excellent woman or excellent wife, it says. And quite often, I think we've all heard discourses on this excellent woman or wife and talking about how it exemplifies the church, and the church is shown in that. And I think it's a fantastic lesson we gain from that. Some people have used it to say this is the kind of wife a young man should look for. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. It does show there's some wonderful lessons that we can gain from that. But I think in the context of Proverbs, this excellent woman or noble wife is the embodiment of wisdom. If you look through the characteristics of this excellent woman and how she is described, if you look through the book of Proverbs, you're going to find the same terms described as wisdom. And we'll just give a few here to start off. Proverbs 31:10 says, "An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels." Let's compare that. Proverbs 3:13, talking about wisdom. "Blessed is the one who finds wisdom." Finds a wonderful wife, an excellent wife, finds wisdom. "She is more precious than jewels." Proverbs 3:15, wisdom. "She is more precious than jewels." Proverbs 31:12 says, "She does good and no harm all the days of her life." Proverbs 3:17, "Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are ways of peace." So we see that context there. And you can keep going through them and find all the way through the Proverbs lots of these connections. And not only that, but you can turn to James 3:17 and 18, where it talks about the wisdom from above. And again, you can find those characteristics mentioned in this honorable or excellent woman. The wisdom that is pure, peaceful, open to reason, full of mercy, full of good fruits, impartial, sincere. It shows, again, and in this description, this woman is one who takes care of all kinds of things. She is looking in everyday things. She is wise in all her choices, just like wisdom is. Well, brethren, I'm going to need a part two for this, but I really thought I could get more in there, but I didn't even get into the meat of the Proverbs yet, of all the Proverbs. But the thing about Proverbs, that one lesson that I would like to end with here, is that the Proverbs are a set of guidances. They're not set commandments. They don't tell us specifically what to do. And I want to give an example from the book of Proverbs that it's something that they are admonitions that we are to look at and to listen to and to reason on. And the example I want to give is in Proverbs 24, 5, and 6. These two Proverbs are side by side, and they sound like they absolutely contradict each other. Let's read them. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. Verse 5. Verse 4. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. Verse 5 says, answer a fool according to your folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So what are you supposed to do when you speak to a foolish person? Are you supposed to answer him or not? The answer is yes. With that, brother, we'll...
Proverbs 26.
Oh, did I say Proverbs 26, verse 4 and 5? Sorry, 26. So the answer is, to be wise, you have to assess the situation. You have to know the person you're talking to. You have to show understanding of the subject. You have to show skill in how you're going to determine what to do. And you have to have the moral aspect in how you answer. Will it uplift the person? So at times when you're talking to someone, you just know it's pointless to continue on because they have no desire to listen. You're just wasting your time. You're only going to get further into an argument. But yet at other times, it's important that you have to answer that person because it's imperative that you teach them or help them understand. So, but it takes wisdom to do that. And that's what the book of Proverbs is trying to teach us to do. And not only that, but I think it's a nice lesson showing us the whole Bible, how the Bible is a book of wisdom. It's a book that's trying to teach us how to understand God's ways, how to walk in God's ways. Because the Bible is not, there is some things that are very straightforward and easy to understand. And there are a lot of things that, boy, we keep going, man, wouldn't it be nice if God would just tell us, this is the choices that I have to make, and it would be so easy that I could just do that. God doesn't want that. He's not a helicopter parent. He doesn't hover over us. He watches over us. He's protecting us, but he wants us to learn how to make the proper decisions ourselves. And he gives us everything we need to learn how to gain wisdom so that we can do it. And brethren, we're going to fail. We're going to fall. But God uses that to teach us and to help us. One last thing. I just wanted to bring one point out here. And this is a thing that I found interesting, and I was listening to a Jewish person talking, and he made an interesting thing. And he was saying that in the law, the commandment about the seventh day should keep holy and do, you know, all of a sudden my mind went blank. Do no work on the Sabbath day and keep it holy. They made a point that in the Jewish tradition, they have a writing that was from right around the turn of the time of Jesus, just slightly after, that they have 31 rules of what is work and what is not work. Because when you think about it, if I asked every one of you here, keep the Sabbath day holy, do no work, what does it mean to work? But, you know, we could all come up with a whole bunch of different ideas. The Jewish people have to kind of figure this out. And you can understand why when Jesus and the apostles walked and they picked grain out of the field, or Jesus did healing, why the scribes and the Pharisees were so quick to condemn. Because, you know, in their mind and thinking, this was work. Because there was quite a bit of ambiguity in that. And that's part of the discerning that God gives us and wants us to do, to try to figure out what does it mean to truly please him, to seek diligently. And as Brother Raphael says, the only way we're going to figure that out is by seeking diligently. We must at all times seek to know God's wisdom. And it will be opened up. The scriptures are clear. Brother Raphael brought that beautiful scripture out in Corinthians, or the second chapter, where, you know, that it's revealed through the Holy Spirit. So with that, brethren, we hope that this has stimulated you on the thought of wisdom, making sure that we use and seek after wisdom, seek after God's wisdom, and use the wisdom that we gain in a manner that is going to uplift and build up our fellow brethren, uplift and build up those that are around us, and give us the ability to be a praise and give praise and glory to our Heavenly Father. And not only that, but remember, God has given us Christ, and Christ is wisdom. He is the source of all wisdom to us. In the Lord, that's blessed.